CITR 101.9 FM presents News 101, Vancouver's volunteer-produced student and community newscast. Now, here's your host, Katie Comley.
Good evening. Coming up on the program, Canada will be going to the polls on October 14th, and UBC is catching one bad case of Canadian election fever. We'll have all this, plus your weather forecast, coming up this half hour right here on News 101. After Stephen Harper's announcement Sunday calling for a federal election, UBC got its own election stock market rolling, where interested parties can buy shares predicting who they think will win the election. The market is not for profit, and you can invest between $25 and $1,000 in shares. The money is paid out after the election based on who best predicts the outcome. The UBC election stock market, which was started in 1993, has successfully predicted the outcome of the federal election in 1997 and 2000, and the provincial election in 2001. At 4:30 today, 70 traders had invested just over $19,000. At noon, the Conservatives led in the popular vote and seats markets, followed by the Liberals and the New Democrats. Associate Professor Werner Antweiler of the UBC Souder School of Business says that they have had a lot of interest in the market and that traders seem to be very active. If you're interested in participating in the UBC stock market, go to www.esm.ubc.ca and follow the link in the navigation menu on the left to open an account. With more on that and other local and provincial news, we're joined in studio by News 101 reporters Carrie Baptist and Brad Pepnick.
A professor at UBC's Sauder School of Business is predicting that the value of homes in Vancouver is about to drop. Professor Sir Somerville says the decade-long bubble in urban housing prices will soon come to an end. He predicts that homeowners can expect anything from a rapid drop in housing prices to a long, slow decline to a flat market. According to his study, housing prices in Metro Vancouver are 7 to 11% higher than they should be, comparable to paying rent on that property over the long run. Somerville cites affordability of housing as one reason the market price for properties can no longer continue to rise.
BC's Solicitor General is taking a stand against what he sees as two-for-one deals for provincial criminals. According to Solicitor General John Van Doren, many criminals going through BC's criminal justice system purposely delay their trials for as long as possible in order to capitalize on a deal where they get 2 days taken off their sentence for every 1 day spent in jail before the trial. Van Dogen says that this policy acts as an incentive for criminals to delay their trials as long as possible so that their eventual sentence is shortened. He says that BC should eliminate their two-for-one policy and that by doing so, the province will clear up a lot of its trial backlog.
Remember Vancouver's leaky condo crisis? We'll get ready for the leaky school crisis. As a result of problematic building construction between 1985 and 2000, approximately 400 schools across British Columbia are already leaky or being assessed for leaks. This is the same problem which plagued construction period. This is the same problem-plagued construction period that resulted in the leaky condo area, which requires billions of dollars in repairs. Executive Director of the Provincial Risk Management Branch, Phil Gruer, says that the estimated cost of fixing the leaky schools in BC will be about $377 million. The risk management branch has taken over responsibility of having the leaks fixed in order to reduce the burden on individual school boards, and the cost of the repairs will be covered by the Ministry of Education. With more on that story, here is Brad Pepnick.
Thanks, Carrie. Although most of the problems have been found in the exterior of the schools, mold can cause serious health problems in some schools, including A.B. Greenwell Elementary School in Lake Coachan on Vancouver Island, had to be abandoned because of the high mold spore count. Condition assessments are being conducted across BC by five engineering firms, and affected schools are currently in different stages of repair. 48 schools in Surrey, which underwent a population boom between 1985 and 2000, are presently being assessed. The work is being done on schools in order of urgency, according to Mr. Gruer, and finding the money to actually do the repairs can be difficult. There have been numerous lawsuits filed against builders, architects, contracts, plumbing and heating firms, inspectors, and other trades. Most of these lawsuits, according to Mr. Gruer, have been settled out of court.
Thanks, Brad, and I apologize, I mispronounced your last name. It's actually Pepping, which I will work on that. It's time for a quick break, but stay tuned to CITR for more news following these public service announcements.
Are you a band or musician located in Vancouver or the Lower Mainland? We're now accepting entries for Shindig 2008. All styles are welcome, whether you're a solo country artist or a 10-piece punk band.
You'll need to send us a minimum 3-song demo of original material, plus your contact information. Put everything in an envelope. Mail it or drop it off before August 8th to Shindig 2008, CITR Radio, number 233/6138, Sub Boulevard, Vancouver, BC, V6T1Z1, Canada.
We also love web-based submissions, such as ones via MySpace or electronic press kits. Please email shindig.08@gmail.com.
You know, as much as I hate to brag about Shindig, I must say tonight we got a Shindig for you that is so far in, it's out of sight.
Are you looking to fulfill your passion for justice? Join us. The Vancouver Rape Relief and Women's Shelter is looking for women volunteers to help us run our 24-hour rape crisis line and transition house for battered women and their children. Training is 6 weeks long and free. Training starts now. Please call to book a training interview. Phone us at 604-872-8212.
Hey, are you ready to head back to school in September?
For sure, but I'm worried that I won't be able to cover all my costs this year.
Have you ever done work study? I did it in the past, and it was a great experience and good money. You just need to be a Canadian citizen or a permanent resident.
And studying at UBC?
You got it. If you want to earn decent coin, pad your resume, and work on campus, work study is where the smart money's at. Just go online to Career Services and check out the listings.
That's solid advice. I'll definitely check out work study this year.
For more information on getting hired for a work-study job, visit www.students.ubc.ca/work-study.
This is News 101, and the current time is 5:09. Now with a look at national and international news, we're joined in studio by News 101 reporter Carrie Baptist.
It's official. Canada goes to the polls on October 14th in order to determine who they want to be the next Prime Minister of Canada. An early poll done by CBC and Environix indicates that if the federal election were to be held today, Stephen Harper would win with a solid majority of the votes at 38%, with Stéphane Dion and the Liberals 10 points behind at 28%, followed by Jack Layton's NDP at 19%. Both the Bloc Québécois and the Green Party fell far behind with 8% and 7% respectively. However, when the same poll asked which individual political leader would make the best prime minister, Jack Layton pulled ahead of Stéphane Dion by 2 points to sit comfortably behind Stephen Harper at second place.
Leader of Canada's Green Party will not be participating in the upcoming leaders' debate for this October's election. The decision to exclude Miss May was made by the group of broadcasters who will cover the debates, who said they found that if Miss May was included, it was likely no debates would be held at all. Three parties opposed the inclusion of the Green Party in the leaders' debates. Miss May feels that she is being excluded by other party leaders because of suspicions that she will endorse the Liberal Party. Earlier today, Conservative Prime Minister Stephen Harper said that if May was to be included in the debates, it would be like having two Liberals participating. Miss May rejected this claim by refusing to endorse the Liberal Party during the campaign and said that although she does not regret saying that the Liberal leader Stéphane Dion is an honorable man, she does not feel that he is the best choice for Prime Minister. With more on that story, here is Carrie Baptist.
Thanks, Brad. Despite Ms. May's assertions that she will not support the Liberal Party in this election, controversy arose this morning with the surfacing of an email Ms. May sent to Brent Fullard, the new Liberal candidate in the riding of Whitby, Oshawa, Ontario. In the email, Ms. May enthusiastically wished the Liberal candidate good luck. Doug Anderson, the Green candidate in the riding, said he was surprised about Ms. May's support for Fullard. The Green Party will pursue legal action against the broadcasters for what May is calling anti-democratic closed-door backroom decision-making, which was designed to exclude the only female party leader. A new online multimedia archive called firstvoices.ca is currently being created by the First Peoples Heritage Language and Culture Council in association with the TELUS Phone Company. The First Peoples Heritage Language and Culture Council of Canada is a Crown agency that works towards protecting and restoring native heritage, language, and culture. The firstvoices.ca project is a province-wide initiative aimed at preserving British Columbia's remaining 32 Aboriginal languages through the creation of an online multimedia archive. FirstVoices.ca provides an online database of video clips demonstrating cultural practices and actions, each of which represents specific verbs and are designed to be used as teaching tools by Aboriginal communities, along with all audio recordings in their own language and dialect. The project is very time-sensitive, as languages are lost with the death of community elders. But unfortunately, there just isn't enough funding to move the project along fast enough. The First Peoples Heritage Language and Culture Council relies on outside funding to support its projects, and TELUS is the largest supporter of this current project. TELUS has offered equipment technicians to produce more than 225 silent action videos to add to the provincial language bank. According to Tracy Herbert, Executive Director of the First Peoples Heritage Language and Cultural Council, each language could take over 10 years to fully record as the combined result of the large number of words that each language contains and the project's need for more funding.
It's time for another break, but when we come back, we'll update you on international news and UBC athletics. You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
GoGreenShuttles.com and the Pemberton Festival now have a direct shuttle service all weekend long from Vancouver right to the festival gates. GoGreenShuttles.com is your alternative to high fuel and parking costs, with return tickets just $70 when purchased before July 10th.
That's right, there are ways to go green without spending a lot of green.
Want to find out what going green really means? Want to find ways to save money and conserve resources like energy and water?
GoGreenShuttles.com. You do the partying, we'll get you there.
Vancouver Latin American Film Festival. For its 6th annual Latin American Film Festival, BLAF will be showcasing a selection of Latin American films from September 4 to the 14th at 3 theaters in Vancouver. The theaters are Pacific Cinematheque, International Film Center, and SFU Harbor Center. The lineup includes a dynamic collection of documentaries, full-length features, and short films from countries such as Argentina, Brazil, Canada, Cuba, Chile, Colombia, France, Mexico, Peru, USA, and Venezuela. This year's program will showcase the cinema of Brazil. For more information, look at www.blaff.org. Vancouver Latin American Film Festival, bringing Latin American culture to Vancouver.
Welcome back to News 101. I'm Katie Conley, coming to you live from the Student Union Building at UBC. Thanks for being with us tonight. In an effort to clean up its cities, the Nigerian government continues to evict countless people from its capital's notorious slums. With more on that story, we turn to our friends from FSRN.
In one of the worst violations of housing rights in the world, Nigeria has evicted 1.2 million people since the year 2000 in an effort to clean up its cities. In the country's capital of Abuja, hundreds of thousands of people have become homeless, and many have simply been pushed further and further away from the path of the bulldozers, only to create new slums. FSRN's Sam Olukoya has this report from Nigeria.
After bulldozers pulled down their homes, residents of the Kabajiji slum in Abuja searched through the rubble of roofing sheets for any valuable property. The Nigerian government wants the capital to look modern, classy, and world standard. So hundreds of millions of dollars are spent to polish Abuja City with new office blocks, grid of four-lane highways, and luxury hotels. The number of homes destroyed in Abuja City alone passed 800,000 in the last 4 years. Chukwuemeka Nwanze had a home in Kamajiji slum until early this month when authorities bulldozed it.
I live with my family. We are four in number. Me, my wife, and my two kids. We're outside. The rain is beating us. We don't have no home now. I have no home. Because for the moment, I have no home, sir.
Nwanze was given no compensation and not even a notice of eviction. Desmond Chiche is a member of the Women Environmental Program, a local NGO.
You have a lot of people on the street. They don't have anywhere to put up their heads. Those who are really affected are the women and the children. The children that are supposed to be in the school, they are on the street because their houses have been demolished. They don't have where to sleep on. In terms of the women, seriously, some people, because they don't have a way out, some people decide to run away and leave their wives.
Diro Onifade is a senior official of the Federal Capital Development Authority, the government agency carrying out the demolition. He defends the government's action, saying the slums were illegally built in the wrong places.
Slumming means people building substandard houses, or in some cases even standard houses, where they ought not to build them. You cannot build on services, for instance, on sewer lines, on water lines, places designated as green areas, you know, to buffer for one reason or the other. You cannot live in such places. But these are the kind of available spaces where people are forming slums or future highways, you know, future rail lines. These are places where people are building. And you have to keep removing such things because that is not the purpose for the land use of that particular area.
There had been cases of riots to protest the demolition. Chiche says the police shot some people during the latest incident last month.
In the process of demolition, some people were actually shot in the process. They claimed that they were protesting against it, and they were shot. As a result, one actually died, and then three were hospitalized.
The government is building 200,000 low-cost houses for some of the displaced, but that will house only less than 5% of the evicted population. The remaining 1 million have simply been pushed further and further away from the bulldozer's tracks, only to create new slums. For Free Speech Radio News, this is Sam Olukoya in Abuja.
And thanks as always to FSRN for making that piece available to us for rebroadcast. Right now, it's time to take a look at what's happening in the world of UBC athletics. Here's Tyler Noble with Monday's edition of Thunderbird Eye on Sports.
All right, thanks very much, Katie, and good to be back with the News 101 crew. Well, what a difference 2 weeks can make in university football. After a surprising 24-10 defeat to the Simon Fraser Clan in their season opener on August 23rd, the UBC Thunderbirds responded in a big way on Saturday afternoon by dominating the Alberta Golden Bears 27-9 before a packed house at Thunderbird Stadium, evening their season record to 1-1 and putting them in a tie for second, at least for now, in the 7-team Canada West Conference. It was truly a team performance in the home opener as UBC's game looked miles ahead of where they were 2 weeks ago in Burnaby. On offense, defense, and special teams, UBC was far better than their opponents from Edmonton, thanks in part to a pair of unexpected stars that had a breakout performance for the Birds on Saturday. Head coach Ted Gavaya says UBC's defensive front seven were the ones who really stepped up.
Our defense came to play, and we still got to get better at tackling, but I'm confident as they recognize the things that we're doing well and what we need to get better at, we'll continue to improve every week.
Can you talk about the pressure that not only McQuaid got on the quarterback, but a guy like Nathan Kanya was just really hitting hard out there today?
Yeah, Nathan was on fire today, and, you know, he's a neat kid. He's a guy that even when we're in half strip, he always wears his game pants, and he's a great kid and a great recruit for us, and I'm glad to see him playing at that level.
And then there was freshman Spencer Betts, who racked up 253 all-purpose yards, including a spectacular 82-yard touchdown catch that really put the game away midway through the third quarter. Betts describes how the Birds were able to expose a flaw in Alberta's coverage on that play.
That's something we've been seeing all week. It's a certain coverage they run on the weak side, and our head coach and our quarterback and everyone all for the last 2 weeks have been really working hard at hitting some deep balls and just executing and keeping the defense honest. So when we saw that defense, our quarterback made a great read and just put the ball up there.
And speaking of Nathan Kanya, who the coach referred to just a little earlier there, that third-year outside linebacker had 9 tackles and 2 sacks on the day, but he's not taking all the credit.
Our D-line was in their gaps. Then we just execute. Everyone's got an assignment. If you trust your teammates and you do their part, then you do your part. And so everyone did their part.
Now, the performance by Spencer Betts, the former Holy Cross Crusader, is certainly a welcome surprise for Coach Gavaya.
He was the top recruit for us, and the beauty with him is we got him for 5 years. He made some big plays, and I couldn't be happier for him.
As for sophomore quarterback Mark McVay, he had his best ever performance in a Thunderbird uniform, going 10 for 14 through the air for 189 yards, 1 passing touchdown, 1 rushing touchdown, and just 1 interception. He relied big time on the legs of running back Cheng Wei, who picked up 89 yards on 16 carries and scored UBC's opening drive touchdown. Up next for the Birds is their first true road game of the season, a date with the defending national champion Manitoba Bisons on Saturday afternoon, a game that can be seen on Shaw TV starting at noon Pacific. The Birds are also 1-1 after losing to the Calgary Dinos this past weekend. It was a weekend of unexpected results for UBC's soccer teams. They began the 08-09 season at home on a brand new field turf pitch and were hoping for a sweep of all 4 games, but all they managed was 1 win. The women christened a new Thunderbird Park on Saturday, tying Saskatchewan 1-1. It was the Huskies scoring the first goal at the new venue 10 minutes in. Then Michelle Yakashiro tied the game in the 55th minute with a low shot from just outside the 18-yard box. But that's all UBC would get as the game ended in a 1-1 draw. Coach Dick Mosier said his team got off to a slow start and referred to the Huskies as a team that we, quote, we really should beat, unquote. On Sunday, they did just that, dominating the Alberta Pandas in a 3-0 win. UBC got off to a much quicker start in that one, with Jenna Clark scoring in the 2nd minute. Caitlin Davey added another just before the half, and Anya Siglock made a triumphant return to UBC with a goal in the 72nd minute. The men's team, meanwhile, managed to pick up just 2 points from their opening weekend. Wilson Wong has the details on that.
There's one word being used to describe the UBC men's opening weekend, and that word is frustrating. In Saturday's game, Saskatchewan scored in the first 15 seconds. UBC tied the match in the 60th minute when Nick Poole tipped in a free kick from outside the penalty area, but the Huskies retook the lead 5 minutes later. UBC captain Graham Smith scored the final goal of the game in the 75th, converting on a penalty to the bottom left corner of the Husky net. Final score 2-2. Sunday's tie between UBC and Alberta was scoreless, despite UBC carrying most of the play. The Thunderbirds outshot the Golden Bears 18-9, but Alberta goalie Jaswinder Gill made 2 diving stops, 1 in each half, to keep UBC off the board. Thunderbirds midfielder Jorge Angel Mira on what the players are feeling.
Well, we're kind of upset. It's not what we expected out of the weekend. We're expecting 6 points and everything. But I guess it's better than losing.
UBC has no fifth-year seniors and just 4 fourth-year players on the team. Coach Mike Mosher says his squad is still young, and he's looking for the right combination up front.
Whether it's a forward or a wide player, you know, we need somebody to sort of catch fire and sort of take the initiative and start to become that guy that we can rely upon to score goals.
Both UBC teams play their first road games of the year at Trinity Western on Friday and then Fraser Valley on Saturday. Wilson Wong, CITR Sports Vancouver.
And thanks to Wilson for that. So as he just mentioned, the soccer teams at Trinity Western and Fraser Valley this coming weekend. Women's field hockey, they get underway with UBC visiting Alberta next weekend, and men's volleyball goes on a preseason tour through the Okanagan. We'll have full details on all of that on the Friday edition of News 101. That's your Thunderbird Eye for this Monday. Katie, back to you.
Thanks so much, Tyler, and great to have you back. It's a new year, and you're back doing UBC Sports and CITR.
Yeah, I know. Definitely exciting for me to be in third year of sports directing, and all's gone very well so far.
Great. Glad to have you back. And finally, it's this week's weather forecast with Alice Wong.
Here's your forecast for September 9th to 12th. The weather's looking gloriously sunny this week, and temperatures will be great for this time of the year. When you wake up in the mornings, it might be a little cool and autumn-like, but it sure should warm up considerably by the afternoons. The ridge of high pressure sitting over southern BC should prevent any frontal systems from moving in and creating precipitation. From Monday evening to the overnight, it'll be partly cloudy with a low of 11 degrees, and there will be some fog patches as well. Tuesday, sunny with a high of 19 near the water, warmer inland. Wednesday, sunny with a few clouds, high of 21. Thursday, still sunny, high of 20. Friday morning, it will be partly cloudy and 12 degrees. The weekend's looking just as nice, so remember to tune in on Friday at 5:25 p.m. for your weekend forecast. Currently, it's 19 degrees and mostly cloudy at YVR. That's your weather this week, brought to you by the Storm Club of UBC. Contact us at stormubc@gmail.com for more info. For News 101, I'm Alice Huang.
Thanks so much, Alice. And that's our program for Monday, September 8th, 2008. Today's newscast was brought to you entirely by volunteer efforts. And if you'd like to share your comments, give us a hot news tip, or get involved with the show, contact us. Our phone number is 604-822-5334, or you can email us at news@citr.ca. Megan Turcotto produced this radio program. For more news, join us on Friday at 5 p.m. for the next edition of News 101. For the entire news team here at CITR, this is Katie Conley thanking you for listening. Stay tuned for Career Fast Track coming up next on 101.9 FM, CITR.